always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
These trials are foolishness, Stuart. They still haven't even identified a crime in New York. You have the documents case, which is now fully blowing up because Jack Smith is overzealous and doesn't understand how to protect the rights of the defendant or even how to handle evidence. The January 6th case, oh please, that's so ridiculous. Was always ridiculous, even from the start. And then you got Fannie Willis down in Georgia, and she might get kicked off of that case. What people are seeing is a recklessness from the radical Democrat Party just trying to convict Donald Trump no matter what the law says.
506, and welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. My partner Tim Jones is off today. This is day, I think, 14 or 12 or 13 of the Donald Trump trial. A lot going on there. We've got on the line with us a new guest and a good friend of mine. She is Jennifer Bukowski. She is executive director of Show Me Defenders, a not-for-profit handling murder cases on behalf of the Missouri Public State Defender System pro bono. She is also the president of the Federal Society of Jefferson City's Lawyers Chapter. She serves on the board of directors of the Show Me Institute and on the Missouri Supreme Court Task Force on Criminal Justice. And somewhere between all of that, she also guest hosts occasionally on 93.9 The Eagle there in Columbia. Jennifer, welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show.
Great to be here, Chris.
Excellent. Jennifer, one thing that I want you to clear up for me, and I've heard this over and over and over, and Representative Byron Donalds, he said the same thing, that there has not been a crime identified in this hush money case. I thought the crime was the made up crime, the misdemeanors of putting in a false bookkeeping entry and trying to disguise a campaign contribution. I thought that was the crime. Why do we keep hearing and a crime hasn't been identified?
Because it hasn't, Chris. He's charged with 37 counts of making a false business record entry, but you have to make that entry with the intent to defraud and the intent to commit another crime and to conceal the commission thereof. Well, what crime was he intending allegedly to conceal or commit by falsifying these business records? They've refused to say. They did a motion for a bill in particular to try to get them to narrow it down to like four things. But it's just outrageous that the former president of the United States is sitting there in court and his team does not know specifically what crime that he supposedly is covering up in order to prepare the defense of the former president. And today they had custodial witnesses that were just sitting there saying, yes, I'm from the phone company. This was a phone call that was at this and that time. They had tied up Donald Trump all day in court to sit through that monotony. It's really unbelievable.
We saw the so-called blockbuster testimony of Stormy Daniels over a day and a half. You know, a lot of people had to be reminded, Jennifer, that this is not a case on whether Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels had sex. It was about this alleged discrepancy in this bookkeeping entry.
And it's not a crime to pay someone money to not tell their story or their allegations of having an affair with you. So that in and of itself is not a crime, but that's pretty much all Stormy Daniels is there to testify about.
What do you think about the judge allowing Stormy Daniels to go off all off track and to bring things into the trial that shouldn't have? And of course, the jurors are supposed to act like they didn't hear that. As a brilliant attorney yourself, what do you think of the judge doing that? And is that a grounds for appeal?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I mean, allowing prejudicial and irrelevant information that doesn't go to the heart of this case about these business records entries and whether he had any kind of intent to conceal a crime, instead allowing salacious details of an alleged 2006 sexual liaison with this porn star, that can taint the jury. That can be unfair to the defendant, Donald Trump, and that could be a crime. The refusal to grant the mistrial as requested by defense counsel could be a ground to reverse this on appeal.
Jennifer, you know, I said last week is that I think earlier this week that I think President Trump must carry around a horseshoe, a four-leaf clover, a rabbit's foot, and any other thing that you would deem lucky. What's happened with these trials that have just fallen apart has been absolutely amazing. Tell us about the Florida trial that has been postponed indefinitely. What are the issues that are involved there that has made this a case that that can't be tried anytime soon?
Well, the judge down there, she's actually a Trump appointee, and that one has been, because of the complications of all the different pretrial motions, she said, look, we cannot get through all these different things fairly by the May 20th court date. So it's been delayed indefinitely because they have so many pretrial proceedings to get through, including, like, we've seen a lot of documents get unredacted, and that's been kind of eye-opening, some of the things that have come out from that have been previously redacted that we've been able to see, such as, like, the Secret Service cooperating with the feds during the Mar-a-Lago raid. And it's just been interesting to watch that all unfold and have more transparency into how things went down.
Speaking with Jennifer Bukowski, Executive Director of Show Me Defender. She's also President of the Federalist Society's Jefferson City Lawyers Chapter. I want to ask you about the Fani Willis case. The judge, appellate court, this week ruled that Trump can appeal a decision that allowed her to stay on as the prosecutor. What do you think the chances that Trump's appeal can be successful? And do you know what grounds, are they still using these basic grounds that she had a conflict of interest to throw her off the appeal? And is that solid, do you think?
I think it's a good sign that they did allow the appeal to proceed, because it's very limited what you can do. An interlocutory appeal, interlocutory meaning before, you know, the trial's over, we allow you to go ahead and be heard by higher courts on certain issues. So I think it's a good sign that they're allowing that appeal to take place, and that will certainly delay the trial until after the election, most certainly. I mean, it's very likely that it will. And so they wouldn't do that if they didn't think the claims had some merit, that there's this conflict of interest. And indeed, if you look at the trial court's decision, where it kind of split the baby, he said some very, very strong words about Fani Willis's demeanor and her testimony in this case, and the concerns that he had about her and her paramour and their testimony to the court. So, I think that that's an indication that maybe they get a different special counsel if they do prevail on that appeal, which would push things off even further and maybe even result in the dismissal of the case.
Mm. All right. We covered Mar-a-Lago. We covered hush money. We carried Fani. What am I missing? Are we missing a case? Which one?
Well, of the Trump cases, we have
there's four,
one.
Right?
Yeah, there's four. There's the D.C. one.
Oh, right.
And then we had other topics like Vernon County and...
No. I was meaning on the Trump... I was meaning Trump trials. I was trying to get through all the Trump trials, and you brought up the January 6th. We're waiting on the Supreme Court to make a decision on Trump's immunity.
Okay, so whether or not, you know, presidents have to worry about being criminally prosecuted after the fact by their political rivals who then take power is the issue at the immunity argument that the Supreme Court is currently considering. The Supreme Court is also considering a case by another January 6th defendant that could affect many of the charges that Trump is charged with in the indictment, as well as to whether or not this, you know, count that was this statute that was created for Sarbanes-Oxley, the accounting stuff, whether that could be applied as they're trying to apply it, the Department of Justice is trying to apply it to the January 6th defendants and former President Donald Trump. So that one is also in limbo. There's so much going on. I can't even not even imagine how much Trump is paying in legal bills right now. But he needs good defenders on all these fronts because they're coming at him to try to prevent us from being able to reelect Donald Trump for president, all in the name of saving democracy. It's just quite something.
All right. We've gone through the four Trump trials. Let's bring it back here to Missouri. Our radio colleague and attorney, Mark McCloskey, won an important case in Vernon County. The Vernon County Central Committee had sued to remove certain members off the ballot who did not take a written test or an exam to prove their Republican worthiness. Your thoughts on this, and will this appeal, and can it hold up to appeal?
Chris, this case, you know, has huge implications. Vernon County has a population of 19,707 people. It's on the west part of the state.
So that's a weekday Cardinal game attendance.
Yeah, right? So it's a small county. Republicans decided to kick off eight local Republicans, many of whom hold office right now as like the county clerk and, you know, local county positions off of the ballot, because they wouldn't take this moral value survey. And, when they tried to submit their $100 filing fee to the treasurer of the county Republican Party, they didn't accept it. So McCloskey led a suit to say these people need to be removed from the ballot against the clerk of the county because they aren't endorsed or they didn't accept the money. And the judge ruled, yes, that's a ministerial duty of the clerk. They need to look whether or not they accepted the money. And since they didn't, they're booted off the ballot. Well, Chris, this has big implications because if just the local Republican Party central committees can pre-screen who can be on ballots, then the voters don't get to decide amongst the primary candidates.
Is that the appeal?
The next level to the state GOP, all of a sudden you're going to have to like win a mini election before you can be on the ballot to begin with. But on the other hand, you have the First Amendment right of association of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. There was another case that's like kicking around right now where a guy from the Klan filed as a Republican, and the Republicans want him off the ballot because they don't want to associate with him. So it's kind of balancing the rights of the voters to be able to decide what candidate should proceed to the general election during a primary versus the Republican Party's First Amendment rights to association. And so it's a really interesting legal issue, and I don't know if they'll need litigation or legislation to sort this out in the future, because you and I were both at the state convention. It can be a different group of characters that are, you know, in different roles in these central committees in the counties throughout our state, and they don't necessarily reflect the views of the plebiscite at large, but they could all of a sudden be deciding whether or not someone can be on the ballot. That would be a humongous increase to their power, because right now they're not really that much of an entity. If they get to start deciding who gets to run, then they'll all of a sudden be incredibly powerful players.
Speaking with Jennifer Bukowski, Executive Director of Show Me Defender. She's also the President of the Federalist Society's Jefferson City Lawyers Chapter. Jennifer, speaking of last weekend's state convention in Springfield, it did not end like a lot of us wanted with unity and all of us getting ready to go to Wisconsin and as delegates to cheer on Donald Trump and hope that he defeats President Biden. Your overall view, you were a delegate, you witnessed what happened, your views on what happened.
Well, Chris, I mean, I was there. I felt somewhat blindsided because I was communicating with fellow delegates and, you know, asking them, you know, are you going to support our committee woman or whatever? And I was told yes. I didn't have anyone tell me that they had any kind of objection or complaint. And then out of nowhere, there was this big movement that voted out our national committee woman, our national committee man, that also, you know, changed the rules and got rid of the chair's slate. And so they're picking their 27 people to go to the RNC national convention. And I hope they don't, you know, I hope they behave themselves and don't embarrass Missouri in any way. I'm sure that they don't intend to,
but I'm not sure
who will be showing up in Milwaukee.
Talk about how the rules are changed, because I'm sure a lot of folks will wonder that, and there may be some controversy in that. How were the rules changed?
Well, there are a couple of different things. One thing was the rules were that the chair of the party, Nick Myers, gets to pick two people from each congressional district to go to the national convention, and he had picked those 16 people. And they changed the rules to say, nope, we get to decide here in this mob, you know, voting thing where you're standing up or sitting down, what all 27 of the delegates. And so they changed that rule. So, and then they put in their own slate of 27 delegates that didn't include the 16 that the chair had picked. So there could be a challenge to the credentialing of the delegates. I'm not sure if that will take place or not. But that was one rule change. Another rule change that they had was they had a rule that you had to have copies for all the delegates of any amendments to the platform. Mm-hmm. They wanted to change that so that you didn't have to have the copies. At that point, I was like, I will go run to the copy machine for this lady that only has 400 copies, like the amount of time we're spending on this. But so there was a fight about that. And then they ended up like doing a PQ and adjourning before we even adopted a platform at all. It was quite a mess. Mm-hmm. It was chaotic, and it wasn't like I expected it to go, but it was, you know, kind of messy sometimes. Yeah. Democracy is messy.
I was just about to say democracy is messy sometimes. Jennifer,
but there wasn't a lot of transparency, and so that's what concerns me with this mm-hmm. Vernon County situation. If you have committee members that may or may not tell you whether they're for you or against you, and all of a sudden they're like, nope, you don't pass our morals test or whatever for reasons that we just get to decide arbitrarily. So you don't get to be on the ballot because we're not going to deposit your $100. I mean, are they really representing the interest of, you know, all the Republicans in their county? I mean, it's going to really change the power dynamics quite a bit and make it much more important to pay attention. Do you even know who your committee, you know, your county committee Republican members of your central committee are? Have you participated in selecting them? Have you voted for them? Because all of a sudden they could be deciding whether or not you get to vote for people in the future.
Before we close up here, Jennifer, I want you to talk about your organization, Show Me Defenders, which is a nonprofit organization that does some great work pro bono. Tell us about Show Me Defenders.
Show Me Defenders, it's a not-for-profit. I did innocence work, you know, where people have been wrongfully convicted, and realized that, you know, if people had adequate representation at the outset, poor people, you could make sure you prevent the wrongful convictions, because no one wins if you put the wrong person away for a murder. Mm-hmm. And murder is where the stakes are the highest. So this is just a new organization to help the public defender on bigger cases on murder cases to make sure that people get adequate representation and shine some sunshine into the situation. Not to let the guilty walk free, but if you protect the constitutional rights of the least powerful among us, you're protecting them for everyone.
That is Jennifer Bukowski. Her ex account says she's a libertarian Republican defense attorney, radio talker, centrally located there in Columbia, Missouri. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for joining us. And please don't be a stranger. Let's do this again. Great talking to you and getting your insight and expertise.
Anytime, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jennifer. And up next, 524, Dr. Aaron Hudlin, chief economist at the Show Me Institute. Got a lot of economic news to speak with the good doctor about. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Under Joe Biden, at the beginning, when President Trump left office, it was 1.4% inflation. Now you look at cumulative inflation over the entire time Biden's been in office, it's up right around 20%. Some things, whether it be electricity, a number of other things, are up more like 30% increase. Mortgages, home mortgage payments are on average 90% more expensive under Joe Biden. And two-thirds of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. So when Biden says, like he did in that interview, that people have the money in their pocket, well, they don't. And this is why your numbers are in the toilet.
5:28 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. It's Friday, and I'm feeling real economic-y. That means it's time for...
What is your financial situation?
All of our holdings are tied up in the railroads.
Yeah, Reading Railroad, Beano Railroad, Pennsylvania Railroad.
I won second prize in a beauty contest. That's $50 right there.
Are you guys just saying Monopoly stuff?
And as he does every Friday, every other Friday, Dr. Aaron Hudlin, chief economist at the Show Me Institute and former chief domestic economist and senior advisor at the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Dr. Hudlin, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you. Every morning I wake up feeling economic-y.
Wow, that's a good word. We're gonna get that into the lexicon there. Dr. Hedlund, we had yesterday on the show with this Stewie Rosenblum, who has a prominent mortgage company here in St. Louis, American Mortgage Corporation. We were talking about mortgages and the economy in general. And while he was in studio, we got a report on my computer that showed that mortgage rates were the lowest they have been in 5 months. Does that mean that there's some headwind here and the economy is going to continue to get better and the housing market will do better as well?
So, I mean, mortgage rates have been on kind of a wild ride because it's all dependent on what people think the Fed is going to do. And but keep in mind, we're talking about fluctuations between the high sixes and the low sevens. Right? These are all very high rates compared to what they had been a few years ago. I mean, you mentioned that 90% number. Let's convert that to dollars and cents. If you get a $400,000 house, which is about the average now in the country, a little bit lower in Missouri, then payments are nearly $1,400 more per month now compared to where they were a few years ago. That's not the total payment. That's the increase in payment because of where mortgage rates are.
The Fed this week, I think it was, Dr. Hedlund, left interest rates unchanged and signaled that they were wary about how stubborn inflation was proving. Are we going to ever get the much anticipated rate cut that we have that's been talked about for the last six, seven months now?
Yeah, well, it has been premature for months and months and months to talk about rate cuts. I mean, the fact that Wall Street was clamoring for this stuff a year plus ago never made any sense. When Jerome Powell came out in December and sort of signaled it's coming around the corner, that was very premature. Yeah, at some point we'll get rate cuts, but not anytime soon because inflation's not 2%. And in fact, it's actually been going in the wrong direction the past few months. So I think the Fed needs to be very clear, which is that as painful as the current rates are, it's that much more painful if inflation stays high. So they need to keep the main mission. And then when inflation hits 2% and stays there, then we can talk about rate cuts.
Speaking with Dr. Aaron Hedlund, chief economist at the Show Me Institute. Dr. Hedlund, I was listening to a podcast the other day that said that the UK is doing very well economically, that they are looking to cut interest rates, and that they are probably going to hit their 2.5% inflation target by the summer. Why is the UK getting their inflation? How have they gotten their inflation under control, and we're still having trouble doing that?
Well, that may have been an overeager analysis if they're saying the UK economy is doing great, because I don't think I'd characterize it that way. So their inflation number may be coming down, but their growth number is also pretty terrible. I mean, they've had a little bit of a recession there, and I think now their economic growth is, you know, 0.6%, I think, is the most recent number I saw. So, you know, they're really in a pickle. And unfortunately, neither major party in the UK is growth-oriented. You know, neither one of them is thinking about how can we expand supply to create affordable abundance. And so, yeah, inflation may be coming down, but what we really need is low inflation and high growth. And that's actually what we had back in 2019.
You know, I think I may have asked you this question before, Dr. Hedlund, but, you know, with inflation being in the economy and prices high, I always wonder, you know, how do prices come back down again? It can't be sustained. We're paying $20, you know, for two McDonald's meals. It's got to eventually come down something reasonable. And I saw an article today that said McDonald's is working on a plan to introduce $5 value meals. Is that how you get inflation out of the economy? And how can they do that?
Yeah, so first of all, and this is something that I think people will be a little bit concerned about hearing, but I think it's the truth. The Fed's goal is not to bring prices down. They will admit defeat on that. They're never bringing prices down. All they want to do is stop prices from going up. So in the best case scenario, through the lens of the Fed, is you basically stop inflation and have prices stay relatively flat, and hope that wages catch up. And because if you look at the past few years, prices have outpaced wages, and if you wait a few more years, maybe wages gonna catch back up. Now, I think we can do better than that. You know, maybe that's what the Fed can do, but we can talk about expanding our energy production, really having an energy dominant strategy to bring energy prices down, which kind of filters out to the rest of the economy. We could talk about building more housing and reducing these artificial drivers that make construction really expensive so that house prices. We don't want house prices to tank. We don't want a housing bust, but we do want more affordable options. So I think there's things we can do in specific areas. But the idea that we're going to have overall things coming down, I think that's probably unlikely.
Dr. Hamlin, I want to get your thoughts on this quote here that I got from CNN. Don't shoot me for it, but it's a pretty good quote. I want to get your thoughts on it. Retailers have marked down the prices of thousands of products, yielding in a game of chicken with consumers as inflation has forced customers to choose between what they want and what they need. Break that down. What are the retailers doing, and will this help inflation?
I mean, I think inflation fundamentally is a macro phenomenon. Whatever little pricing games retailers might play, I mean, those are interesting things to track. But really what it comes down to is inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. So we can either suck artificial demand out of the economy by, for example, having some spending restraint on behalf of the government. The prospects of that certainly aren't very good right now. Or we can have pro-growth policies that expand supply, more goods, right? If you have more goods, then the money chasing it doesn't have to be as high of a price. So you might see individual retailers doing this or that, but the reality is it's kind of the macro picture. And my concern is that consumers have had it. I mean, it's not just that they've had it in terms of their attitude. They have no capacity to deal with this. There was all this built-up pandemic money they had. The San Francisco Fed recently released a report saying it's now gone. That buffer is gone. So people are just putting it on the credit card.
That was, you read my mind. That was my next question, that the Federal Reserve showed that the American household has fully spent their pandemic era savings by March of this year. And I was going to ask you, what does this mean for our economy long term, Dr. Hamlin?
Well, I think you're seeing that transition start to happen, which is people were able to kind of get by with the high inflation. They didn't like it, but they could kind of get by with all that savings that had been built up from government money. Now that that's gone, they're turning their credit cards and other forms of debt. And that's where you're seeing out of the New York Fed, these kind of every quarter we get the latest information on how much debt is out there. Record high debt. It's going up rapidly. And it's not just that the debt's going up, delinquencies are going up. So it's going up at an unsustainable pace. And that's why I think we're starting to see growth soften as well. Like this whole kind of kumbaya story about great economic growth in 2023 was never going to last, and we're already starting to see the bad news creep in, unfortunately.
Speaking with Dr. Aaron Hedlund, chief economist at the Show Me Institute and former chief domestic economist and senior advisor at the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Dr. Hedlund, report has come out that said that Social Security benefits will run short in 2035. That's a year later than previously projected, according to the annual trustees report. That's still a pretty sad situation. What can we do to shore up Social Security besides just heightening the mandatory age and not raising taxes?
Yeah, I mean, the fundamental issue with Social Security is that the ratio of retirees to workers is going in the wrong direction. That's really how Social Security operates, is you need to have enough workers to sustain the retirees. So I think the number one thing we can do, the sort of low-hanging fruit, is we need to get people off the sidelines. And labor force participation is not as high as it could be. So we're talking people between the ages of 25 and 55 who should be working. That percentage of Americans working is, particularly for men actually, is lower than it had been in the past. So let's get them back in the labor market, and not just working, but actually advancing in their careers and earning more, because the more income and growth that's generated, the more that helps Social Security. And then, because that's the key, is we need to make sure Social Security is around for future generations. And in terms of things like retirement age, I would not do across the board changes, because, you know, one thing to take note of is life expectancy has gone up, but not for everybody. It's gone up for higher income white collar workers, but has not gone up for people who are working kind of very physically demanding jobs. So I think we have to take that into account when we're thinking about options. Mm.
Dr. Hedlund, currently a strong U.S. dollar is creating some financial jitters around the globe. Every major currency in the world has now fallen against the dollar in 2024. Why is that a bad situation?
I wouldn't necessarily call it bad. There's always pros and cons to changes in the dollar. I mean, we are the dominant currency. You know, people rightly are worried about, you know, we don't want to ever lose that reserve currency status. I don't think we are. When things get tough, people view the U.S. as a kind of a flight to safety, and that can increase the demand for the dollar. Now, there is a challenge if you're an exporter. because when our goods are more expensive to other countries and they don't want to buy as much of our stuff just because prices are high. But in general, I don't think there's a way to say high dollar. It's necessarily overall bad or overall good.
Mm. Dr. Hedlin, there have been reports that if Donald Trump is fortunate to regain the White House, he has a plan to possibly devalue the dollar. Tell us what that means, and is that a good or bad thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not personally aware of some sort of active strategy to devalue the dollar per se. I think, as we hear him speak, what he's concerned about is that we are strong globally in terms of the economy. So I think he wants to make sure we have resilient supply chains, that we're not dependent on adversaries and unreliable partners for critical goods and services. So he certainly talks about that a lot. And fighting, of course, currency manipulation that certain countries are doing. So in that sense, when China is artificially manipulating its currency, there's a discussion about how to push back against that. But I've not heard about a systematic attempt to, quote unquote, devalue the dollar necessarily. Mm.
And finally, Dr. Hedlin, President Biden has four major achievements he can tout: the American Rescue Plan, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, the CHIPS and Science Act, and the Inflation Reduction Act. Each one of these bills spend a total of $1.6 trillion. So far since April, only 17% of that has been spent so far. I asked hypothetically before you came on, is the reason why so much of this money has been spent not because we know probably government inefficiency, but is it because they also know if they dump more money into the economy, it'll make it that much harder to get inflation under control? Is this administration that smart and responsible?
That would be a shocker, because everything they've done has been inflationary. I mean, even just this past week where Freddie Mac is talking about buying up home equity loans. I mean, every single policy move is about trying to inject more stimulus, whether it's government checks or student loan forgiveness or now buying up home equity loans. It's the same philosophy over and over again. And this is why we've seen decades high inflation that has left people's purchasing power below what it was several years ago.
Dr. Hedlin, we've also seen the President Biden continue some of Donald Trump's tariffs policies, especially on steel. I think they made an announcement yesterday regarding Chinese steel tariffs. How worried are you about a potential trade war with China?
Well, I think it's time we do stand up to China. I mean, it's one thing to talk academically speaking about free trade, and I think trade has been an immense force for prosperity over the course of history. But free trade, when one side's cheating and actively, not only that, but actively using that wealth to try to accrue power so that they can undermine the entire economic rules of the road globally, that's not a good thing. So it's time that we push back against them. And I would much rather be us than them. China is in a very bad position economically right now, both with a real estate crisis and an aging population. And government-directed growth rarely leads to sustained growth.
We have been speaking with Dr. Aaron Hedlin, chief economist at the Show Me Institute and former chief domestic economist and senior advisor at the White House Council of Economic Advisors. You can reach him at his website at aaronhedlin.com and on Twitter or X, Aaron_Hedlin, H-E-D-L-U-N-D. Aaron_Hedlin@X. Dr. Hedlin, thank you so much as always for joining us, and we look forward to talking economic news with you in a couple of weeks.
Great to speak with you as always.
Excellent. Dr. Aaron Hedlin. Boy, we went through the gamut there, didn't we, Joey? Was all that startling economic news, was that exciting?
Of course, and you got a little plug in for our friend Stewie too. I like that.
I transition. I did. The bagel loan. Stewie Rosenblum, always good to have Stewie in the studio with us, and he gave us a very personal story yesterday regarding the situation in Israel with Hamas and Israel and them fighting, and gave some personal anecdotes about it. So good guess. Good guy, good company. One segment left. We will try to end the show on something light, or hopefully inform you on something that you haven't heard today. So don't go away. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Breaking overnight, a controversial move in Virginia to restore the names of Confederate leaders at two schools in Shenandoah County. Just after midnight, the school board voted 5-1 on this issue. It's been nearly 4 years since the school's names were changed from Stonewall Jackson High to Mountain View High and Ashby Lee Elementary to Honey Run Elementary. The resolution now restores those Confederate names. The vote came after hours of testimony from the community.
Everyone is going to think that we're racist rednecks. Yep. And that's not okay.
5:48 on the Tim Jones and Chris Harf Show. Joe, you got a chuckle there on that comment.
That's not okay. We're not rednecks. Get them out.
I think that's very interesting, though. You know, I thought this was a movement that we wanted to remove these statues. We wanted to change the names of these schools and these institutions. Usually when political correctness has won a victory, there is no going back. And this is very surprising that these schools are going to be restored their Confederate names.
They debated this for, I think, 6 hours. They didn't vote on it till after midnight. People were commenting. If you hear some of the actual footage of the people that were saying comments, other people said, you know, those school names are boring, so I'm just going to go change it back to the Confederate ones. And other people said, what if we just change it to Abraham Lincoln? And that got an applause. Like, can't it just be Abraham Lincoln? It was weird that there's this much debate in 2024 about Confederate generals.
Did they also have on the agenda talking about the falling reading and math scores that have happened in the district since?
This is the only thing they care about.
since the pandemic.
You can't read the name of the school, so it does not matter.
Yeah, I just wonder, was that part of it? Joel, you informed me today, and I didn't know this, that there was a shooting that was near our old offices, radio studios down at Union Station. Mm-hmm. A lot of homeless are down there, of course. And I had the question, how do you get a gun?
Do you want to hear the clip to catch up on
this? Let's hear the clip.
This all starts about 7:30 or so this morning down Market Street, literally feet from St. Louis City Hall. A St. Louis City police officer is here working with one of their mobile surveillance camera units here. He sees what's happening. He gets out to try and deal with the situation. The two people who are in that conflict are running at the officer. Shots are being fired from the gunman at the other person. St. Louis City police officer shoots and kills the gunman here, and one of the questions being asked but has not yet been able to be answered yet is whether these two men were part of the homeless encampment.
I wonder if they got that gun legally. Did they have a
background,
go through the
check?
Background check to get that gun? How was we'll hear that argument. And I also wonder too, and do we know the, and this is why it's relevant, do we know the race of the homeless person that was shot and killed?
You know what? I should look that up. You know, they didn't show him laying on the ground.
Because if it's an African American, and we haven't had any protests here in St. Louis lately. There have been protests on these campuses on other issues. But you know how these activist Antifa types, they just love the protests, and they love to have any type of spark to get them going. So and also too, you know, with summer coming up, hot summer, people like to protest and everything. Do you see anything?
Not yet, but it was interesting in the background of the shot when they were out there next to our old job by Union Station. You know, they were showing the city hall basically, and there were tents, just tents lined up on the yard. It's weird that we allow tents to sit there on that beautiful ground over there. In front of City Hall.
And it's a big issue for the mayor, of course. She has had many plans to do something with the homeless. One of those plans, ill-advised plans, was to use an abandoned school in North St. Louis to house the homeless. As you'd expect, the residents had a conniption fit and didn't want that. And, you know, we heard that story about the squatters there in South City, who lived in front of on a street corner for 3 years, basically. After their tent was dismantled, the city tried to get them help, tried to get them shelter, and they didn't want shelter and help. They liked living on the streets. And that's the thing that a lot of these activists don't realize. Some of these people want to live on the street. They don't want to be told when to come in. They don't want to be told that they can't do drugs and do their illicit activities. They love that life of freedom. And having a job, their income is begging all day is okay for them when they can drink up or shoot up what they've panhandled all day. That's the life they want. And, you know, Jesus said, the poor you will always have with you. We should not have these people being disrupting City Hall, living in front of people's homes and breaking into cars, probably stealing handguns and shooting at the police.
The quick update is that the guy who was shot was rushed to the hospital and he died, actually. Okay. So there was the one who was the shooter. The cop killed him in the street.
Okay.
Then the other guy got rushed to the hospital. He died. And then afterwards, they cleaned up the homeless encampment, got the tents all out of City Hall there.
And then they'll be back in a couple of weeks, probably. It's just, I don't know. This is a problem. Look, I have compassion for anybody that most of these people are probably drug addicts or have some type of alcohol disease or they have some type of mental incapacity. I understand that. But their rights shouldn't supplant other rights, the rights of other people. And there are places that we can place them to live if we do the right thing and put them in these places instead of having them living in the street.
It almost seems like they're hiding the race. I don't know why I'm not seeing it. I've checked three different stories.
Trust me, if you can't find it, they're black.
Okay.
Yeah. If you can't find the race of the person or a picture of them, more than likely they are black. Joy, we talked the other day, too, about St. Louis is cracking down on temporary license plate scoff laws. And that's what the Post-Dispatch called them today in an editorial. Scoff laws, tax scoff laws. The city has a plan to spend $350,000 to help people that are behind on their license plate tags. I'd love to see what the stipulation are. Is it like, if you're 2 years or older, we can't help you? If your tags are 6 months expired, a less, we'll help you? Where's the cutoff, or does it matter?
It seems like you just have to claim ignorance. Like, I didn't know there were sales tax when I bought my car, because that's what they're using this as, is we want to educate the drivers who just didn't know there's money you have to pay after you take the car home.
And what if you have, like, a very, very expensive car? Say you bought like
I bought this Tesla Cybertruck and exactly. I need some help, Tish.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't afford the taxes. I mean, what is the limit? If you buy a high end car or whatever, and the taxes are $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 to get that taken care of, do that? I mean, there's just so many problems associated with this. But people can say it's discriminatory or it's not fair. Why is this car? You know. And $350,000 sounds like a lot of money, but Joey, you and I and others listening to us have seen a lot of cars driving around with expired plates. So that $350,000 may not go as far as we think it does.
One project we could do is we take these Newstalk STL bumper stickers and we just put them over these paper tags.
I like that.
These paper temp tags. And then they'll be excited to see our wonderful logo. And then when they pull it off, it rips their temp tag in half. And it's a service that we do.
Live and local. Let's hear what KSDK has to say about the scaff laws.
St. Louis is using $350,000 of the city's budget to loan St. Louis drivers money for insurance and sales tax to get up-to-date plates so they don't have to pay it all at once.
What we want folks to walk away with is not just updated tags and insurance, but an understanding, a better financial literacy, a better financial education, so we can avoid this going into the future.
So the city is still trying to find a vendor or a company to take this program on, and once they do that, they'll be able to explain more about how these loans will work, and we'll make this as accessible as possible.
Oh, my bad. It's a loan. I didn't know it was a loan. I thought they were giving it.
And they got no one to fulfill this order yet. So they're still looking for somebody.
So people who didn't pay their taxes, we're going to trust them to give them a loan to pay their taxes.
They'll have money later.
Yeah, they'll have money later. Joey, good show today. Larry Connors USA is up next, 6 to 8. Larry's going to have a big show. My phone is dead, so I don't have his topics, but stay tuned. Listen to Larry Connors. You have been listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk. Drive safe and have a great weekend.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.